Hello and welcome to episode 2 of series 2 of the On The Ward podcast. In this episode, we're going to be focusing on the social side of mental health and how social life can have an impact both for people inside and outside of the hospital. So come with me for the social episode of the On The Ward podcast. Okay, so we're back for episode 2. And this episode, we're going to be focusing on the social aspect of mental health and how that affects patients both in the hospital and outside hospital. So I'm joined by Caroline again.
Hello, John.
Hello, Caroline. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Very good.
So why do you think the social side of people's recovery is important to both the patients inside and outside?
I think it's just what makes us human, I suppose. When you think that we are social beings and we are made to be around people, that's as important to people in hospital as it is to anybody else, and it helps the people that we're working with to just have that sense of normality, I suppose.
Yeah, because it's hard when they come in, a lot of the stuff is taken away, so the social side of their life is sometimes taken away, so they can't go out very often.
Mm-hmm.
They have to wait for visits, so that interaction they would have had is kind of removed from them. So I suppose it's important that we have to give that back.
Yep, and get that back in a safe way, so that can be quite slow, I suppose, that all of the things that somebody might have been able to do before they were in hospital might for a period of time not be safe for somebody to do, and that can feel quite restrictive.
Yeah.
But over time, thinking about what that person needs in their life in order to feel like their life is fulfilling, I suppose, a bit like you and I, that you need a balance of different things, don't you, that might help you meet your need to feel, I don't know, good about yourself. You need to feel creative, you need to feel connected to community in some way. People have spiritual needs, they need to feel like they can take on a task and achieve that, and sometimes also to be around with like-minded people. And they're all things that you and I would do on a day-to-day basis naturally, but things that are often taken away when somebody is in a hospital setting.
Yeah, because it was really interesting from the first series that most of the patients, the thing that came out was that the thing that they appreciated the most from being in hospital was the connections with other people.
Mm.
So not the medication, not the therapy, it was just being able to talk to someone, having someone regular there.
Yep.
And I think that's still true now, is that probably even more so now because of the lockdown and not being able to see people, that we need just to be able to talk to someone.
Yep.
And
that often is, a lot of the interventions that we end up doing on the ward are, so you have the more formal interventions, so you have the an OT, an occupational therapist, come and see you to do a particular type of therapy. You might have a psychologist come to see you, a nurse come to see you, but often it's the more informal talks, chats, just spending time together that people seem to remember and value the most.
I would say that's almost like the what do they call it, the art of nursing. So it's really hard. So obviously, you know, everything's science-based and everything, but sometimes there's that little bit in between that is you can't really explain, and it's often the hardest bit, like you say, just the, like you said, the stuff in between all the other stuff.
Yeah, and the bit that patients take notice of, because they, I think they notice that that's the bit that is you going above and beyond. It's not the bit that you're necessarily, they don't see that as what you're paid to do. You have to do your duties, whatever job you're in here, but the patients seem to really appreciate the small bits that feel above and beyond that, like taking the extra time to talk to somebody about their interests, sitting down watching a film with somebody, playing a computer game with somebody, all of those things that helps you feel connected to somebody, I think is often what people value the most.
So you're saying I can just play computer games with people?
Some days.
Very good. So I suppose what we're going to speak to, a patient who's left, actually, and a social worker. So we all have social workers on the ward. They're generally for the social stuff outside of hospital. So the big thing for most of our patients is having visits home.
Yeah.
And the social worker would be kind of integral to that. Why is that important, I guess? Important for them to still have the connections with home. Particularly as a lot of our patients are quite far from home. So sometimes they're placed, you know, hundreds of miles away from where they actually are from.
I think for our patients, it's often one of the most important things, the most motivating thing, and sadly often, as you say, our patients are miles away from home, and they have often a need just for that normality and to be around their family in their home or in a family home outside of a clinical setting. Mm. Often what the patients really want is to be able to go home on their own without a staff member, without somebody observing them.
Yeah.
And that's a huge motivation, I think, in terms of trying to progress and trying to get out of hospital.
I think you're right. I think that's the main thing for them, just trying to get back to where they're from.
Yeah.
And get back to their reality that they were in before. And I suppose that's what we're all trying to achieve for them. But like you said, that we have to take into account sometimes the risk and sometimes the things that they go home to might trigger them and might be upsetting for them. So we have to monitor that risk.
And that's where social work would come in as well, to go and assess that before somebody goes home, to speak with the family, sometimes to go and see the family home, see the environment where they'll be, to make sure that that's safe and that's going to be something that the patient is ready for, that they are able to do safely, that the staff members will be safe. And sometimes it can be quite complicated. It can take quite a long time to arrange as well to get to that stage.
Well, I suppose like everybody's family is complicated, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to first hear from a patient, and then we're going to hear from one of our social workers here, and then we'll have a chat back around after them too, okay?
Okay.
All right. Okay, so I'm here. This is a very special recording, so I'm actually still on the ward, but I'm joined by someone who is off the ward. So, hello, how do you do?
Hello, John, how are you? I'm great, thank you very much.
So this is it's a different recording, because like I say, you've actually left hospital now.
I certainly have, back in the end of January this year.
And so I guess the reason for having you on is to kind of see what that transition was like and see, because obviously the patients we've featured so far have all been in hospital, which you were, but now you're out. So it'd be interesting to see what that transition was like.
It's amazingly very, very different than what I was expecting, to be honest with you. It's gone a lot smoother and a lot more positive than I thought, which is absolutely fantastic.
I was going to say, so I suppose the easiest way for us to start is right at the beginning. So I suppose, how did you end up in hospital in the first place?
I personally tried to take my own life on two occasions, which I'm quite open about, and I do talk about my story a lot. Subsequently, I was obviously admitted and sectioned. But yeah, I'm doing really, really well now, and it's just nice to be out. Obviously, the lockdown's been really, really difficult. It's been really, really challenging, but I've made the most of what I can. I've been on holiday about a month ago, camping with a friend without staff, which is fantastic.
Amazing, yeah. Although, like you said, it's like you've had this newfound freedom, and then unfortunately, everybody's been locked up because of the lockdown.
It's been horrible, because I'm such an outgoing person. I like to be busy. I like to be doing things in my time. And as I've said in my radio interview earlier this year, I don't like being bored. I don't like having nothing to do. And obviously, with COVID, sometimes you haven't been able to do all the things you want to do.
No, definitely not. And I was going to say, so when you were in hospital initially, that must have been really frustrating for you, because as much as we try in the ward to keep people busy and that, there is a lot of downtime and a lot of time where people are bored, really.
There is a lot of downtime. You're sitting on the chair in the day areas, in your room doing nothing. And there's a lot more limitations that you can do on the ward. You can't go out when you want to go out, I know some patients who are on a score can have more freedom, but even that isn't the freedom that you would have when you go home, example. It's very, very difficult.
Because I try and paint, so I guess the first series I was trying to say that, maybe hospital is not what the image that people have in their heads. If you speak to people outside, sometimes they think it's like a Hollywood film, and it's like full of people in straitjackets and things like that.
There is a misconception, I think, that people are mentally, all people in hospital are really bad people, and that they're never going to get a life, or they might be all patients hear voices or violent people. That's not actually the case. It's actually some really nice down to earth people in hospitals who just unfortunately went through a dark stage in their life and needed extra support. And with my case, I obviously tried to do what I did, but luckily enough, I've had support from some brilliant professionals. I'm very lucky that St Andrews, I've worked with some really good psychologists and RCs and OTs, which ultimately I think have changed my life around. And I'm really, really grateful for that.
Yeah, because I was going to say that I think sometimes as well, the impression is as well that once people are in hospital, everything stops. So their life stops and they don't do anything and they just kind of sit in the corner and get treatment. But that's not really the case. So were you doing things when you were inside hospital?
I underwent quite intense psychology and OT. it's going back to your point that people do sit in the corner. I think this is one thing I always say to patients when I speak to people or peers in other hospital, that you've got to have ambition, you've got to have hope. Without those few things, you're not going to get yourself out of hospital. You've got to believe in yourself, and you've got to realise that there's more to life than being in hospital. And it took me quite a few years to get to that point in my head, in that headspace. But as soon as I started to realise that there is such time of ambition, start dreaming, you know, start thinking about all the things I want to achieve in life, that's when the change can come.
So as cheesy as it sounds, it's a bit like hope. I guess you need hope.
You need hope. You know, what's life without hope? I thought I always hear people. You need hope that you've got a good future ahead of you. You need hope that you can get out, be around your friends and family. You've got to hope that you can get out and live an independent life, because your hope is a really vital part, I think, of, you know, anyone's self-esteem, self-confidence, etc.
I was going to say, so obviously, like, you know, I'm trying to portray that maybe hospitals aren't as bad as people think, but there must have been some dark times as well, because obviously the patients in here and people in here, you know, are struggling. So you must have had some dark times too.
You've got to remember that everyone in hospital is in hospital for a reason. Doesn't mean they're a bad person, but you know, I've witnessed some quite traumatic incidents where people have been seriously injured, or you know, some really ill patients who just generally don't have the capacity to understand. And I always find it quite difficult to, you know, to, I feel quite sorry for certain patients who lack capacity to understand that what they're doing in their life.
What's that like to live with people like that?
It's quite upsetting, because you think, well, you know, part of you thinks it's really frustrating, some of the things they do, but then you're the other side. For me, I'm lucky enough that I've been able to show empathy and think, well, they can't help it. And as much as on the ward, you have certain patients who may irritate a lot of others. It's important to step back and think, well, this patient can't help it, and actually give them the support that they may need.
I was going to ask, this is going to sound like, and I don't mean this in a funny way or anything like that, but I was wondering, do you miss it? Do you miss hospital?
No, I don't miss hospital, no. And I'd be lying. I miss certain staff, and I miss certain, you know, one or two patients. As we all are aware, that, you know, obviously St Andrews and Mansfield closed down yesterday or the other day, which is quite, they played a massive part of my life and my recovery, and I'll always be grateful for the team at, you know, St Andrews as well as the other teams at Birmingham and Northampton without me. But no, I don't miss it. I enjoy my own space. I enjoy my independence. I'm not a big fat person who enjoys having space, because I like to be around other people. But I enjoy my independence now. I enjoy being able to cook for myself, you know, doing the things that I want to do every day.
Yeah, I suppose. So that might be interesting for people. So I guess I think you've said before that kind of when you come into hospital, a lot of stuff is taken away from you. So a lot of your freedoms, like you said, just basic stuff like cooking your own meals.
You have no liberties, I don't think, in hospital. You can't say, like, tonight I want burger, chips and beans or whatever's on the menu. I know you do cooking settings for the OTs, which are brilliant, but still they're very, very controlled, and kind of you can't use, let's say, a sharp knife, for example, that you may use. Like I use. And there's a lot of things I think before hospital, before I went into hospital, that I took for granted, that now when the team's coming out, I'm very grateful that I have been able to, you know, put the TV on and put a channel that I want to be on. You know,
not, I know, even something as basic as that. I mean, sometimes you don't think about it, that if you're in a communal area, you have to put what everybody wants on.
Exactly. And the arguments, I can say for one, the arguments that go into that on a ward is you'll probably appreciate as a senior staff nurse. Is,
yeah.
I can create some massive arguments, and it has done in my time.
And you can try and do a vote and things like that, but sometimes it doesn't always work.
And there's always kind of the bigger characters on the ward who are influenced and pretty much get what they want, in my opinion. And you could, I think, in a ward environment, you have different kind of strengths of characters. You have some characters who are quite big and quite boisterous, and they'll pretty much get what they want. Then you have some people who can't really speak out. And it's those kind of people I feel sorry for, really. Not feel sorry for, but I feel that they need more of a voice.
Well, it's interesting you say, because even as a nurse, I find it really hard, because obviously the patients that are shouting and being quite loud, they're the ones that obviously get your attention first, and you do tend to go to them first. Exactly. But you're right in the sense that the people that are quiet need support as well, but sometimes they come last because the other ones are kind of shouting a little bit louder.
And that's something I've done wrong in my time. You know, I've never been the loudest one, but I have in the past, you know, seek that attention more so than the others. But I think it's just a learning curve. You have to learn from your mistakes, don't you?
Yeah, well, that's it. I suppose that's part of growing up, isn't it, and part of life. So I was going to ask you actually about, so what was it like when you left? So you left, you say, in January, wasn't it?
End of January, January the 31st, so just over 8 months ago now.
I don't know if you can hear that, it's just one of our alarms going. Can you give me 2 seconds, just 1 second? Sorry about that. Someone sat on their alarm, so I'm sure you remember that all the staff members have these kind of personal alarms, and if they get in any trouble, they just kind of pull the alarm.
And they are one of the most horrible things out because they are so loud. As you could, as any viewers of the leaders who are very slightly, that is nothing compared to how loud they actually are on the ward. And
I know, it's so, and it goes off quite a lot. So obviously they're very sensitive. So luckily someone had just sat on their alarm at that time. So it wasn't a patient or anything going wrong. It was just somebody had sat on the alarm. But they do, that sound, like you said, is kind of, it permeates throughout the whole ward.
Most of those are the autism people who also people with autism who have, you know, kind of that sensitivity to noise. That can be quite dramatic, quite disturbing for them as well.
I can imagine, yeah. And it's like, unfortunately, it makes everybody aware that there's an incident at the ward. So, you know, everybody then knows that there's something going on. Because I was going to say, I, even for staff, you know, when I've been off the ward and I hear something that sounds similar, I'm already up and I'm like ready for, and I go, oh no, I'm at home. You know, you kind of get conditioned by that sound.
You do. And this is the other thing as well. I think one thing I've always had in my experience in hospital is sleeping. I've always found it very hard to sleep because of how often the ward kicks off. You kind of sleep on edge, you sleep half on edge. And I never really slept that well in hospital because of that. Because you go to bed, but you're kind of half awake, if that makes sense, because you're waiting for things to kick off. And it took me quite a few months out of hospital to get out of that habit. And now I sleep my spell, kind of thing. So.
I was just going to say, did you used to be on like 15 minute OBS or anything like that kind of observation?
I've been on the mix OBS. I was actually on 2 to 1 the worst part of my time in the hospital. But I eventually got down to 1 hour with the OBS, which was great.
Yeah. But I was going to say, even the hourly OBS, like if you're sleeping at night and somebody has to come in and check you. So that's part of the thing we do on the ward is where we check the patients every hour. But obviously, if you're asleep, that's, you know, and you're a light sleeper, that can disturb you, I guess.
I'm a very light sleeper. So.
No, I was going to ask you about, so have you found it hard, like socially? So, you know, going out and sort of, although obviously before the pandemic, but going out and meeting new people, how's that been for you?
So I joined a football club in February, but obviously this is for me the next big challenge in my life now is the social aspect because, you know, I am a very sociable person despite my autism, but obviously, you know, it's been very hard to I find it very difficult to go to new places to meet people. Also, I do want, you know, to get in a relationship at some point as well, but obviously these things are quite difficult for me to, you know, to approach. So I'm currently receiving support from my support workers at the moment to try and overcome that hurdle.
Yeah, and it's really difficult now, obviously, with the pandemic for everyone, I guess, kind of meeting people is going to be really difficult. I was going to ask you, and again, any of these questions you don't like asking or answering, that's absolutely fine. I was going to ask about if, do you tell people about your experience of being in hospital?
I do. I'm as I said to you earlier, I'm very, very open about my journey because I'm a big believer in if I can reach out with just one person, and that one person can make a difference to whether give them the confidence to talk out or, you know, talk about their own experiences to help others. That's my. I feel like that's a massive achievement for me.
Can I ask, have you had any barriers to that? Has anybody been maybe not understanding?
Not really, because I've got a project called JTC Inspiring Change. The aim of that is to reach out to people and be a voice for change in mental health and autism. And I've actually had some really nice messages sent to me from people. Who I don't even know, just saying to me how much they're really glad that I've spoken out and given them a voice.
Because I think that's amazing. And I think like most of the people I speak to, when they talk about people and hospitals and things like that, it's not they're not being rude or anything. They just don't really know what it's like in hospital. And they just kind of assume that it is like the Hollywood films.
It's the total opposite. You know, being in hospital is difficult. We have to remember that. I mean, you're in a ward, sometimes terrible, 10, 15, if not sometimes even more patients who have all got their own challenging mental health difficulties, behaviour difficulties. You know, some of them might, you know, have heavy hearing voices, you know, you've got bipolar, lots of different conditions. When you've got any of these conditions, you're already unwell. And so to be put into an environment when you've got, like I said, 15 other patients who've got their own difficulties, it's such a difficult environment. But it doesn't, because it's a difficult environment, doesn't mean it's a bad environment. You know, and I've learned so much about myself being in that kind of environment. You know, I'm much more tolerant now as well. It's one of the other things. I never used to be a very, very tolerant person, but being in hospital, I am such a much more tolerant person now.
Yeah, because you've got to live with people who have got like varying different illnesses.
No matter whether you're mentally ill, no matter whether you're neurotypical, you know, everyone's got a nice side to them, and I think you need to remember that. You should not judge a book by its cover. One of my favourite quotes, actually. And people do, and that's the unfortunate thing, you know. And this is, I've always been a fan of reading what you do, John, because you know you try and obviously combat that. And I think that's great.
Yeah, and I think, like I said, one of the patients we had from the first series mentioned that. when he goes home, or you know, he's out socially, people ask where has he been, he says he's been to prison, because he gets less questions, you know, than if he says I've been to a secure hospital.
I can understand exactly why you would say that, and I can relate to that completely. I mean, there was times in my time that I wish I would have had a prison sentence while I was in hospital, mainly just the fact that I knew when I was coming out, because it's very difficult in hospital not knowing when you're going to come off section, or not knowing when you're going to be discharged. Yeah, and I know that the MDT can give you rough timescales. There's still nothing definitive, and that's what I really struggle with. And I remember saying to several people, I wish I could go to prison just to do time and come out, you know.
And I guess from his point of view, he felt that there was less kind of stigma from being in prison than there was from being in a secure hospital, because he still felt that people thought that he was more dangerous from being in a hospital than he was from being in prison. Yeah. And I think that, like, the way I think the stuff that you're doing, and hopefully the stuff I'm doing, is kind of the way we combat it, or, you know, help people to see what, like, people who have been in hospitals, basically by showing them what they're like. You know, if people just met people who'd been in hospital, they probably wouldn't be as scared.
No, exactly. I totally agree with you on that one. I just think sticking with mental health is just too, you know, too negative. And there's a finger of blame, or that person's mentally ill, it's his fault. It's not. We don't choose to be mentally ill. You know, we don't choose to have these difficulties. And I wish there was a little bit more understanding. But like I said, I was really lucky the time I was in hospital, as much as it was challenging, and there were some really challenging moments, you know, I was confronted to a lot of situations that I wish I'd never had to. But I've worked with some really amazing professionals, and this is why people say to me, surely you can't be in hospital for 3 years and not have anything bad to say. Well, actually, you can, because in St Andrew's, Timmy, the ward are good. They're brilliant hospitals.
And you felt that, like, ultimately, it's kind of work for you.
I just wish, and I think this is something it's more of a personal level than that I wish I would have known what I know now before I've been in hospital, so that way I probably wouldn't have gone down this path. But you live and learn. I can't go back and change what's happened. I can learn from it, and I can make the most of the rest of my life. That's what I intend to do.
Well, geez, that is a very nice sentiment to end it on. What a way to end the conversation. Listen, all I have to say is thank you very much for joining me, and sorry for our interruption earlier, but thank you so much for having the chat with me.
No, good insight for people to realise that alarms do go off quite often. Before we go, may I just say a big thank you to everyone. I know this video is more for St Andrew's in general, but I just wanted to be a big thank you and a big shout out to everybody who supports, not just me, but everyone who, all the people, staff, professionals, as nurses, OTs, you know, healthcare assistants, RCs, anyone who supports people like me, because you all make a profound difference. And I think it's just your work doesn't go unnoticed, and people talk about a lot. I just want people to know that, that's all.
Well, thank you very much. I'm joined here by Paul, who's one of the social workers on the ward. And Paul, I just wanted to talk to you a little bit about, well, one, what does a social worker do? And two, do we need social workers? And three,
sure.
Of course we need social workers. I'm only joking, but I think there's a lot of misconceptions about what social workers do, both in hospital and out of hospital. So maybe you could talk a little bit about what social workers do.
I know when I decided I want to be a social worker, it was about getting a professional qualification. I was quite keen on working with people with brain injury at the time.
Yeah. Sorry, we should back up slightly, because you do have a strange accent.
Oh, okay.
A little bit. So whereabouts are you from?
So I grew up in New Zealand.
Right.
Zealand?
Yeah.
And I came to England 22 years ago. Yeah.
So, but I suppose, so for people that are listening, they may not know what social workers actually do. So on the ward, what would you do? So if I was a patient and I'm inside and I come and see you, Paul, what kind of things do the patients come to you with?
So I suppose we've got a sort of a legal part of it. So there's a legal duty. People were detained here under the Mental Health Act and different sections of that. Mm. And there's sort of legal safeguards. So they have their sections are renewed and it's looked at by independent managers. Mm. And there's a hearing, and, you know, we have to do a report and give our opinion on this person. And we have to sort of gather the views, so we're sort of the outside connection, I suppose, with family, mm. you know, their nearest relative or next of kin or co community teams, other people involved.
See, very important when the patients start making that transition to going out of hospital. So making sure. So you said that the patients are all sectioned, and legally they have the right to aftercare. So
yeah, that's right. So there's a duty on the local authority to provide care and support for that person. They have to offer, you know, sort of arrange something. The person doesn't actually have to accept it.
Do you find that's getting harder now, so to contact community teams? And
well, I think there's always been a lot of pressure on community teams, and it's probably prior to me getting involved with it, it had been getting worse. You know, the pressure is harder, things close down, you know, resources, you know, got withdrawn, I suppose, you know, trying to cost save and things like that.
So what you're saying, I guess, is trying to get the patients out. Sometimes the community teams would be reluctant or not as... So I suppose when they're here, they're kind of in a place of safety,
yeah,
and they're looked after. But when they're trying to make that next step, sometimes...
Yeah, that is a difficult thing. And I mean, I can see it from both sides, so I understand, like you said, you know, they've got people that are in desperate need on the doorstep out in the world, and then they've got people in hospital wanting to get out, and that can be a difficult thing, and that can take continued pressure, I suppose.
What about some of the challenges you've had, Paul? What would be... Well, sometimes it'll be tough on the ward.
One of our big roles is safeguarding. You know, so not that we're in charge of it, but we try and keep an overview of it, and we have a connection because the local authority is responsible for safeguarding. So
again, I suppose for people that don't know, so all the patients here are vulnerable adults, and so as a result, they have to be safeguarded against harm. Various different, well, from any harm, I guess, but.
Yeah, so there's safeguarding legislation, you know, through the Care Act, and you know, they also with human rights and things like that, you know, comes in. But yeah, vulnerable adults. So
and it's everybody's job, as they say, when we have the training. But true. Social work tends to take a lead on it.
Well, have an overview of it, and we liaise with the local authority if there's serious things. So if there's someone gets assaulted or something like that, someone's reported to the police. So there's a lot of that sort of, that's a big part of the job. So police interviews for both, you know, so for people getting interviewed as victims or as perpetrators, you know, we support them as what they call an appropriate adult and make sure they've got a solicitor and stuff like that.
And that must be hard because a lot of these patients you must know quite well, and just seeing it on paper, the things that have been happening to them or against them must be.
Yeah, and that's what you're saying. What's sort of hard about it is that thing where, you know, there's violence between them, or this happens, or, you know, people continue to hurt themselves, or, you know, there's sort of mishaps that happen, you know, when you think, oh gosh, that person should have been on OBS, and, you know, they should have had this or should have had that, you know, and when sort of real harm happens, it can really affect you, I suppose, and when things continue to happen, I think that's quite can affect you.
But I forgot to ask you about the lockdown. How that affected you, or did it affect you?
Well,
affected everyone, I guess. But
funny, John, because I found the lockdown. There was some real positives to it for me. So
what were the positives for the lockdown?
You know that thing when you go home.
Yeah.
On Friday night, I said, what are we up to this weekend? And
you knew the answer already.
My favourite answer used to be like, oh, I haven't got much on this weekend. Okay, great. You know, I can just pot about, do whatever. I don't have any sort of occasions I have to go to.
Yeah.
And,
so you enjoyed being socially isolated?
Yeah. That's, I thought it was, and actually it really pulled me close to my family, especially in New Zealand. Like, we sort of set up a
Skype and Zoom,
WhatsApp, and did a bit of Zooming, and I did get a bit more contact with them, and sort of thinking about things philosophically, I suppose, just what's life about, stuff like that, you know, what do we really need, and stuff like that. So it did impact me in those positive sort of ways. But
negative, I suppose you couldn't go to the pub, right? I mean, that was hard.
John, I can always drink at home.
Well, that's true. But no, I suppose you're right. We should really look at it. There are, have been some positives, I think. Particularly, like, say, you do kind of recognise what's important. And I think sometimes maybe people recognise what's important because, you know, the nurses, doctors, people who work in the supermarket, and the taxi drivers, and people like that, they're the people who are actually important.
Yeah.
Maybe not so much, I don't know, other people.
Yeah, doing a government job.
Let's take it down, I suppose. Well, Paul, all I can say is thank you very much for talking to me. And I'll let you get back to some real work.
Alright. Thanks a lot.
Alright, cheers. Okay, so we're back. So we just listened to the patient and the member of staff. So they were very interesting, Caroline.
They were.
Yeah. So I found it really interesting from the patient point of view. He said that now he's out and he's playing football and he's starting to get back into the social side of it.
Mm.
And just as he started getting to do that, the lockdown happened. Mm. And now he's been forced back inside.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that he said he likes to be around people. But some people don't like to be around people. So do you think it's, you know, should we always be around people or how do you think we should do it?
I think just from my own personal experience and thinking about my experience of working with people as a psychologist, I don't think there's any right or wrong. I think it's just understanding your own baseline and what's good for you and knowing that we need people in our lives to feel connected to and for emotional support, and that's really important and that helps with our identity. But there's not necessarily a right or wrong in terms of how many people you would have around you. Some yeah. people like to be surrounded by a lot of people and have lots of acquaintances. They like to be busy. They like to go to parties. Yeah. Other people are happy with a very small, select handful of friends, and that feels like enough to meet their needs.
Yeah, well, it was interesting because the social worker then, when I said to him about the lockdown and how we've all been socialised, he said, well, actually, I don't mind that. I quite prefer to be
yeah.
on my own and just yeah. potting around the house and just not having to... Because he was saying sometimes you get the obligation to go to things or like that you should yeah. be doing stuff and you should be going to see people and going to yeah. parties or whatever.
Yeah.
And he was saying, I don't really want to, you know.
Yeah.
And that's okay too, right?
Definitely. And that's the type of thing we would think about with our patients in the hospital as well. Thinking about their plans for discharge is yeah. understanding what their baseline is. So understanding what they... need in their life in order to keep themselves well and keep themselves safe. That might be a best friend or a mentor of some sorts and some professional support. But for other people, they might need more than that. They might need a group of friends. They might need a football team to go to. They might need to regularly see people in large groups in order to feel like they are a part of something or part of a local community, things like that.
Well, a really interesting thing, I guess, would be the social media side of it. So, because obviously people are making a lot more friends online. So do you physically have to see people, do you think, to be involved and be in a group? Or do you think you can still get that from just having people online that you can chat to and talk to? Again, there's no right answer. I feel like I'm putting you under a lot of pressure. Not that you know the answers.
I think for it to be meaningful, there needs to be some type of face-to-face contact. There are a lot of people that I've worked with or spoken to once I've been discharged, and actually social media and having loads of connections on social media but not actually seeing anybody can feel really lonely.
Yeah. And also, I guess you have the aspect, fear of missing out. So if everybody's on... line and yeah. doing lots of fun and having parties and going out and then you're not, that can obviously make you feel bad because you think, well, I should be doing the same as them.
And people will never show their bad days, their failures, all of the stuff that they're not doing on social media. They'll show yeah. the 30 minutes where they're doing something brilliant in the day and show it off to everybody, and I think yeah. that has the potential to make people feel really bad, especially if they're already vulnerable.
No, but yeah, I agree. But also, I guess from the patient's point of view, like, social media is like a thing that most people do, and so yeah. they are going to, I guess, have to learn how to use it and utilize it when they get out. So
yep,
maybe they
are, and I think there are a lot of the patients I work with at the minute utilize social media, and I think that is brilliant in that it allows them to feel connected to other people, just yeah. connected to the world, and be doing the same things that everybody else is doing. But it also I think for everybody, it's a skill, isn't it, that needs to be taught as well. Just throwing somebody into social media can be quite a risky thing to do.
Yeah, you don't always get it right. That's what
exactly.
I
can say. Exactly.
And it's a bit of a minefield, yeah.
Mm.
But again, like we said at the start, too, the social side is important for these patients, because I guess if they're going to kind of thrive outside, they are going to need some connections.
Yep. And I'm thinking, as you're saying that about social media, that the questions that are asked are, who is your support? So who can you talk to when you need somebody?
Mm.
Who are you going to be able to go and see if you're having a bad day?
Mm.
Not how many Facebook friends do you have?
Yeah.
Or how many Instagram followers do you have? That's just, yeah. So I suppose that's my answer, that yes, those things might be nice and they might be part of life, but actually when we're thinking about keeping somebody well,
mm.
you want real life people that can help that person to feel
someone
connected.
Who can actually turn up and go around the house and yeah. help them out,
yeah,
rather than just online. But the online yeah. is important as well.
Yeah.
Okay, well that's great, Caroline. That's the wrap for episode 2. Will you be able to join me for episode 3?
Possibly.
Okay.
Yes.
Are we getting better or worse?
Hopefully better.
Okay, we're definitely getting better. All right. Okay. I'll speak to you next time.
Bye.